Yes, indeed, we can and we must, friends. Here we are. I think I saw today 42 days now until Election Day. However, early voting is underway just about everywhere. And whatever places are not early voting, they're going to start coming up here in just a few days. So it is that time of year. I still have no idea what to think on this whole thing. The polling is basically 50-50. There's a lot of energy behind Kamala Harris. There's a lot of energy behind Donald Trump. And I just don't know what to think. My gut feeling still is, as we're sitting here on September 24th, Election Day, just a little over a month away, my gut feeling is the country isn't quite ready for Kamala Harris. I hope the country is never quite ready, by the way, for someone who is has socialist slash communist tendencies. And I don't say that in a besmirching sort of a way. I'm just reading it how it is and what the definition of communism and socialism is. And she's right there. So I don't know if the country will ever be ready for that. I certainly don't think that we're ready for Kamala Harris. She doesn't have the leadership skills. She doesn't have a resume. She doesn't have her own ideas. She can't articulate the issues, but she's not Donald Trump. And for a lot of people, that's all they need to see. And they're willing to take their chances with her. And they say, how bad could it get in the next 4 years? So we'll see what happens. I wish I had a better feel for it. I don't. But that's why we're here every day, to sort it all out together here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, along with a whole lot of things going on a lot closer to home than Washington, D.C. Glad to have you with me here on the program. Big thanks to Macy Dahl making it happen for us behind the glass today. We've got a lot to do on the program today. We got four different people who will be joining the show. Talk to our friend Greg Steeman from Starian Bank. We're going to talk about the rural farm economy today. And they do a lot of ag lending at Starian Bank. What are things like right now? Farmers and growers are looking at pretty good crops out in the field, but they're not worth anything when you get them in. And a lot of guys have some quite a bit still in the bin from last year that they want to sell. So where are we going on that? What does that mean to the people in our farm community? Those dominoes fall pretty fast. We'll also talk to A.K. Kamara today. He's a Minnesota Republican National Committee committee man out of the Twin Cities. And he is a person of color who is saying to everybody, we need to take a look at Donald Trump in this state, not just within the black community, but within the entire state, because Donald Trump is what this country needs. So I'm going to ask him, Kamala Harris, a person of color. A lot of people think that's enough. Why is that not enough for you to make her your choice for president? Does he have a shot in Minnesota, Donald Trump? We're going to find out. Kamara, by the way, a little spoiler alert, believes that Trump does because he's been looking at some of the crosstabs in the polling. Very interesting. So we'll do that today. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Cody Cashman will be with us, general manager of the Red River Valley Fair. The new and expanded Big Iron is in the rearview mirror. It's not the Big Iron Farm Show anymore. It's the Big Iron Farm and Construction Show. So how did everything go after the first year? We'll talk to him about that. That was a couple of weeks ago. And then before we finish up, there's been a lot of conversation about the Minnesota legislative race. And there are a number of people that think that the race is definitely in play for Republicans to take over the Minnesota House and the Senate. So this matters a lot to many people who are listening to this program right now. So a little Minnesota talk today here on the program. We spent a lot of our days talking about North Dakota, but we will tiptoe across the line into the Gopher State for a little bit here as well. A number of interesting things I saw today, heard today that I want to share with you, so we'll do all of that today. One of the interesting things I heard today was Scott Hannon's What's On Your Mind program. Scotty and I are basically brothers at heart, but we do see differently on some issues, and this Measure 4 is one of them. I believe that this is something that the state can do and should do and would be beneficial to the state in the long run. But you got to look at it from the long lens here. If you look at it short term and you say, how are we going to make up, you know, $3 billion every couple of years? It's a stretch to get there, no doubt about that. But lawmakers I talk to say it can be done. And nobody wants to talk about what happens on the other side of this, what that will do to stimulate our local economy, people moving in here. Who will want to come to a place where they don't have to pay their own real estate tax bill. So is it a trick? Yes. Is it easy? No. But is it something that would be a good challenge for our state legislative leaders to figure out. I believe absolutely. And so we're going to continue talking about that. I feel like I talk about this almost every day here on this program. I probably don't talk about as much as I think that I do. But I heard the same things today on the conversation about we're going to lose local control. And it just isn't necessarily true. Everybody's assuming that if the locals run out of money, which they will, we all know that. We're going to need a new school. We're going to need more police. We're going to need all of that. That necessarily means that the people from Fargo or West Fargo, Moorhead, Colfax, wherever, have to go to the state legislature and get more money. However, we go to the local people now for our local needs, and everybody's assuming that will never happen again, and I don't know how you get there. So I heard a lot of conversation about that. This whole thing of losing local control drives me crazy because you're making assumptions that just don't hold water. So we'll welcome comments and conversations anytime on this topic. I don't know everything about everything on this, but I think I have heard and listened to enough to know how I feel about it and that this would be an enormous opportunity for our state, which continues to, by the way, even though they tell us the fossil fuels are dying or going to be dead soon, this state continues to make money, not just going to hand over fist. The state is in a very strong position to make something like this happen. And the fiscal story gets better and better all the time in this state because we've been smart with our resources on the whole. That doesn't mean we can't do better, however. So I'll just get that out of the way on Measure 4 today here on the program. All right, 4:13 here on the Steve Alstrom Show. Let's get to it. The 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire to catch you up on what has been a very busy day. We start with the almanac for today, September 24th, 2024. Average high for this day is 68, average low 45, record high 87 in 1990. 25 degrees, our record low in 1951. Sunrise this morning was at 7:17. Sunrise will be at 7:19. In the markets today, it was another positive day on Wall Street. Fairly small gains, but gains nonetheless. I still believe that this market is trading sideways, waiting for either good news or bad news to send it one direction or another. S&P 500 was up 14 points, Dow up 83, NASDAQ up 100. WTI crude oil up a dollar at $71.54. Gold today up $29 at $26.82. At the start of the year, you could buy an ounce of gold for $2,000. It's now up almost $700 since. Why do you think people are buying gold? I'll just ask you that. You come up with your own answer, and then you'll be able to figure out where I'm going with that. Silver up $1.34. That was up almost 5% today at $32 an ounce. And Bitcoin today up almost a percent and a half to finish at $64,281. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas is $3.21. North Dakota $3.14. Minnesota $3.07. And South Dakota is at $3.08. Diesel today at $3.58 a gallon. In the news today, Moorhead City Council members have approved a preliminary tax levy increase for a 2025 budget. It would be a 12.8% increase. I've been bad-mouthing City of Fargo about 11.2. Moorhead wants to go up 12.8. They want to increase by $3.1 million over this current budget up to a total number of $24.2 million. So they're not going to finalize that until December. So Moorhead people, you have an opportunity to get in there and make your voice heard. WDAY radio has a nice summary today of the higher enrollment numbers for most of the local colleges and universities. Concordia, a 28% increase. NDSU, an 8% increase in 18% increase in transfer students, 6% increase in new grad students, and a 5% increase in first-year student enrollments. MSU Moorhead as well. They've got the Minnesota plan that gives you, what's it called, the Minnesota plan, the Minnesota something, something, something. Anyway, the Minnesota thing that gives you free tuition across state schools there. They have new student enrollments by 8% increase right there. M State's numbers have not yet been confirmed, but they think it's going to be somewhere around 6%. North Dakota State College of Science reports Valley News Live that they've got a 7.2% increase from last year as well. So more kids taking advantage of higher education here in our state. Governor Doug Burgum of the North Dakota University System today announced that the state has officially joined something called the Complete College America Alliance. It's a national coalition of states and institutions of higher education committed to increase the number of students who successfully complete college and get a degree or their post-secondary credentials. It gets a little deep into the weeds about how they're going to do that and what exactly is going to happen. We'll dig into that in a future program. But I did think this footnote was interesting. More than half of North Dakotans between 25 and 64 hold a college degree of some kind. 56.4%. That's above the national average of 54.3%. So we're a smart bunch of people here in this state. WDAY Radio reports absentee ballots will be sent out to homes across North Dakota beginning Thursday. That's right. So absentee ballots are on their way in North Dakota. WDAY Radio also reports that a Minnesota congressman is helping J.D. Vance prepare for his upcoming debate against fellow Minnesotan Tim Walz. Tom Emmer is being used as a stand-in for Walz out of next week's debate. He was chosen so that Vance could find ways to counter the Minnesota governor's, quote, folksy personality. Star Tribune reports today that a new poll that has come out has showed 53% of people surveyed say they approve of how Tim Walz has done as governor, while 44% disapproved. So Tim Walz still has about a 10% advantage in the likability versus non-likability. CNBC reports that consumers' view on the economy tumbled in September. Listen to this, falling by the largest level in more than 3 years. People are fearful for their jobs and business conditions. The Consumer Confidence Index measured at 98.7, down from 105.6. That's the biggest one-month decline since August of 2021. So people are scared they're going to lose their job. They don't think business conditions are going to be good. Meanwhile, former President Trump says NBC News has unveiled several new manufacturing proposals in Georgia today, part of an effort to sharpen his economic platform against Kamala Harris. He said he would reward U.S.-based manufacturers with expanded research and development tax credits that would allow them to write off 100% of the cost of heavy machinery and other equipment in the first year. It's a tax gymnastic, if you will, that just allows people to be able to depreciate right away so it hits your tax returns in a more favorable way right away. He also said that he would reduce the corporate tax rate to 15% for companies that produce their products in the United States, and a couple other things he mentioned there as well. All right, little health news for you. I am getting very, very interested in all this conversation about health, make America healthy again, and getting people off the pharmaceuticals and the processed foods and all of that. The Daily Mail reports that U.S. obesity rates have fallen in this year for the first time ever. And researchers wonder if it's the effect of all these weight loss drugs here. But the report released by the CDC earlier today said that 40% of U.S. adults were obese in the period of 2021 to early 2024, down from 42% from 2017 to 2020. So 2%, but hey, 2% is 2%. And one more here for you. Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre was at a congressional hearing earlier today and said he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. He was one of the biggest stars in the NFL. He's 54 years of age now, played 20 seasons in the NFL, just about all of them with the Green Bay Packers, but a few in Minnesota as well. So he made that startling statement today. He's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and we wish him all the best in his battle against that. We're all getting older, aren't we? Doggone it. All right, when we come back, it's must-see TV for NDSU athletics. The football team gets ready for the conference opener while watching to see if an FBS opportunity might be on the way. That and more coming up next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Every Tuesday, we get to go to school and learn a little bit more about our money thanks to the good folks at Starian Financial. Greg Steeman is a vice president and business banker at Starian Bank in Fargo. Greg, good to visit with you again, my friend. How you been?
Hey, I've been doing well, Steve. Enjoying the last few weeks of summer here, and looking forward to harvest season coming up.
Absolutely, yeah. I will take this hanging on to summer for as long as we can get it. It's been a wonderful last few weeks here. Greg, I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the challenges in the ag community right now. I've heard from a number of farmers, people that grow crops for a living, that the crops are actually looking pretty good, but they're worried about what those crops are going to be able to bring them at market time, because they're just not worth a whole lot. And it doesn't seem as though that's going to turn around anytime soon. What are you hearing?
You know, Steve, I'm hearing some similar things. I know there was a big survey of a number of ag bankers and recently in the Midwest, and they're projecting, you know, potentially up to 40% of producers operating at a loss this year. And that's not what you like to hear, but it's also part of the risk of farming, is that the high cost of inputs and low commodity prices oftentimes will translate into a negative cash flow situation. And that's something that you want to, if you're in that situation as a producer, you want to make sure you're having those ongoing conversations with your banker so that he or she can be prepared to maybe structure something to absorb those losses. Producers in a really strong working capital position can absorb that and take a hit on the cash side. But some of those people that are a little bit more leveraged may have to term some of those losses out. And they'll have to do it maybe using ag real estate or sometimes ag equipment. But those are the conversations that you want to have before, and you want to make sure you have a good handle where what your financial situation is.
Greg, I know you spent a lot of time in the rural communities. You've been in ag lending for a number of years. You've been in this game for a long time. Tell us what it means with that domino effect. When things are tough in the local farm account, in the bank accounts of the farmers, what does it mean in our local communities and our small towns?
That's an excellent question, because ag has so much impact on implement dealerships, and so you're going to see probably less farm equipment purchases, and that translates not only to the implement dealers, but the implement manufacturers, which we have a number of them right here in the Red River Valley. And so that it is a domino effect, to your point, Steve, and it's just something that the communities have to understand and have to be prepared for. When you go back to the producers, you may have to get creative. Can you do some custom work on the side? Can you find some other ways to generate some additional revenue to maybe minimize those losses, if not eliminate them completely? So that's a really great point. It is, growing up in ag communities, you and I both know that the local economy is oftentimes spurred by the success or lack thereof of the farming community.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you're having conversations with farmers about these things, what are some of the things you can say or do to help them plan on making plans to weather some of these financial storms?
Well, it's a great question, and kind of goes back a little bit to what I just addressed. Do you have some opportunities to create some additional revenue streams, whether it's custom work, whether it's, another job opportunity, whatever it might be, in addition to what you're doing? I mean, we all know farming is a full-time occupation, but at the same time, you have to get creative once in a while, especially when the economic times aren't ideal. You have to find ways to kind of work through those situations, and you can't keep, assuming that the same old game plan is going to get you through. Sometimes you have to adapt on the move, and I think our producers are more than capable of doing that.
Well, if you want to talk to somebody who knows this game and has gone through the ups and downs with a lot of producers, Greg Steeman is your guy. You can give him a call, 701-281-5600, 701-281-5600. 5600. Even if you just want to bounce some questions off somebody, doesn't cost anything to ask a few questions. Sit down with Greg for a cup of coffee. You'd be glad you did. You can go online as well to starionbank.com. Greg, thanks for the insight, brother. We appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, take care. That's Greg Steeman from Starion Bank. It is 4:30. Time to check in on news headlines of the day. Ty Schoner is here in studio with us. Ty, thanks for stopping in, my man. Good to see you.
Good afternoon. My first time on the Steve Holstrom Show.
Well, don't be nervous. We kind of wing it around here. It gets a little sloppy once in a while. We have a good time, though, and we have a good run with some good folks listening to the program. So you've been working hard at a lot of stuff here at the news desk today. We've been talking about a few things as well. What's making headlines here this afternoon?
Yes. So one of the big things, taxes up in Moorhead. City Council voting to increase the tax levy Monday. It'll be up to a total of $24.2 million, an increase of $3.1 million from last year. The move by the City Council expected to raise property taxes as well by just under 5%. So the Budget Hawks, 4.9%. the exact amount. The final budget will be adopted in December. So I imagine there's going to be some conversations in the community going forward.
I did the math on this because we've all been watching Fargo with her 11.2% increase. If you do the math, this is a 12.8% jump in Moorhead. So if the people in Fargo are committed to getting it down to 3-ish, which is what we're hearing from Pepcorn and Turnberg, well, in Moorhead, you got some work to do if you want to match them, because you're starting out higher than where Fargo's at on its preliminary budget. So we'll see what happens there.
Grand Forks School Board approving $130 million preliminary budget as well by unanimous vote. At the meeting last night, the board approved a bid of $1.5 million to update security at Red River High School. One of the initial changes at the school but to relocate the administration offices and improve the push-to-talk security feature. Now, work's expected to begin on this next summer. School security stuff, conversations on that.
Absolutely. A lot of people are having those conversations right now.
Which, by the way, North Dakota received $7.5 million in grants from the Department of Homeland Security for protecting citizens from terrorist threats. The funds will be put toward local, state, tribal governments to allow them to respond, protect against, prevent, and recover from incidents. They'll also be utilized to purchase security cameras, screening equipment, and more for high-risk areas like schools, for example. So this is one example where those funds could potentially go if they were to be implemented across North Dakota.
Anytime we get money coming in to make things better locally, that's a good sign. Unfortunately, someone's got to pay for that on the other side, and so that's what we do here on this show a lot as we talk about the back end of that, too. But anything to do with security, Homeland Security, is, I think, a wise investment right now.
One of the conversations I've been following, too, Fargo Public Schools, South High School had a bomb threat on the first day of class.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, there was another bomb threat. And I talked to the superintendent, Dr. Rupa Gandhi, about this. He's like, hey, that's a really unfortunate thing that happened, but it's... we have to prepare for these things. We do postmortems on the events. We try to make sure we try to figure out how these things go. And it's a real challenge these days to kind of figure out how these things are continuing forward.
And most of them are hoaxes, but you got to look into them.
Absolutely. And I like to usually tie in one national story. Sometimes feel good. We'll see how it goes with this one here. But a California man abducted in 1951 when he was 6 years old has been found alive.
Oh, my.
Mercury News in San Jose reporting Louis Armando Albino. Located living on the East Coast, Albino's niece took an online ancestry test in 2020, showing her DNA was a 22% match for a man on the East Coast. After scouring old newspaper stories, the niece took her hunch that the man could be her missing uncle to law enforcement. Investigators were able to locate Albino in June, able to fly him to California to reunite with his family, including his brother. As of now, it's unclear if there's an ongoing investigation at this point.
So you said he's been found alive. Did we think that he was in bad condition? Or
well, when you find these stories, like sometimes you don't really know whether, like, it was a kidnapping story when he was a child.
Oh,
basically.
It was a kidnapping thing.
So that's the thing. He was relocated to a different family in the East Coast, it looks like.
Okay.
And he grew up there. Maybe he knew about his old life. Maybe he didn't. But he's been found alive, and now he's reuniting with some old family members.
Well, he found his way out of bondage, and now he's meeting some old family members. So good stuff.
It's a unique aspect of life sometimes.
Indeed. I like it. Thanks, Ty. I appreciate the update, man.
Good to have you
in here. All right, Ty Schoner, reporter checking in from the Flag Family Newsroom. Now let's send it over to the Weather Center. Meteorologist Justin Storm is on duty. Justin, take it away. Tickets on sale now. The good seats are being sold as we speak. At AM1100theflag.com for an evening with Michelle Tafoya and Liz Collin. We're calling it The Election, the Truth, and You. Thursday, October 17th, 7 o'clock at the world-famous, I don't know if it's where, it should be, Avalon Event Center. It is a wonderful spot to catch a show. And we've got a VIP reception ahead of time. You can buy tickets now. You can get a nice discount on tickets if you're a Flag Plus member, but even without being a Flag Plus member, tickets start just $15, so you can get a really good deal there. VIP tickets at the higher end there, but everything well under $100. We want to have a good full house right there. Michelle Tafoya and Liz Collin, they know the game of how the media plays it, especially around election time, and how you can interpret what's happening within the media circles as well. No two better people to dissect this. They've been in that game themselves for a long time, and great observers can also give us some kind of a readout on what's happening across the state of Minnesota. So I'm excited for Thursday, October 17, 7 o'clock at the Avalon. Go to am1100theflag.com and get your tickets now. All right, we are pleased to be joined on the program by somebody that we've not had a chance to have on the show before. Very excited to welcome him to the program, A.K. Kamara. He's a Minnesota Republican National Committee committeeman and is joining us here on the Steve Holsham Show. A.K., good to have you on the show, my friend. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Great to be on.
Yes, well, I grew up in the Twin Cities area, just a little bit north of there, and much of our listening audience, obviously, is Minnesota as well. But even those of us who live in North Dakota obviously watch Minnesota very carefully because you have some of that culture creep that tends to make its way up I-94 to our part of the world. And a lot of us like to go to the Twin Cities, watch a Vikings game, or maybe go to the Guthrie Theater, go to have a nice dinner. So what happens in Minnesota matters to us in a lot of different ways. So I'm really excited to have you on the show, and I appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to start with a post that I saw on your X account here earlier today. And your post says President Donald Trump will flip Minnesota and Republicans will win down the ballot if we keep up the work and double our efforts. The latest poll had Trump down by 5, but you say there's a catch. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so the catch is that they oversampled Democrats and they undersampled both Republicans and independents. And for anybody that pays attention to politics in Minnesota, understand that if you take every single Republican and every single Democrat, it's going to be about a 32-32 split, and then everyone else are independent or what you would consider maybe lower propensity, or they flop back and forth. So whenever I see a poll that comes out that doesn't have independents as the largest group, I know that that poll is not actually weighted correctly. Now, if you could make an argument to me that you could maybe weight Democrats a little bit heavier than Republicans, maybe 1 or 2 percentage points, but to outweigh them by 6 points, I think is absurd. And so to me, it just shows, if you really kind of dig through the numbers, that the 3 most important issues facing all Americans and even Minnesotans and even North Dakotans, number 1 is the cost of everything. So are things going up or down? Clearly, they've been going up. They're going up now at a slower rate, but they are still going up. Number 2, how is our economy doing? I think the average Minnesotan, the average North Dakotan, the average American thinks the economy is not good, and these polls continue to show that. And then number 3, how secure is our border? And so because those are these 3 nagging, persistent issues when it comes to Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz and their attempt to try and win the presidency and vice presidency, those issues continue to push people into the arms of President Trump and J.D. Vance.
So make the case for us, if you will. It sounds like you believe that Minnesota is very much in play. If that's the case, give us the playbook, or give us a scenario under which Donald Trump can win Minnesota. What has to happen between now and November 5th?
Yeah, so, you know, our big strategy is that we understand that the average Minnesotan, for as much, you know, gruff that we get, which we deserve it, I'm originally from Devil's Lake, North Dakota. So
I didn't know that.
The opposite.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of you. I grew up in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, graduated / dropped out of high school in 2002, back when we used to be the actual Satans and now
yes.
We're the Firebirds.
Right.
And then I came down to the Twin Cities. But the reason I say that is that there's this belief that Minnesota is this purple state. Well, the truth of the matter is we are a red state. It's just we have a lot of Republicans that don't think it's worth their time, effort, or energy. And that data point, we talk about this, the Republican Party itself and also other legislators, State House and the State Senate, that back in 2022, somewhere between 250 to 300,000 Republicans stayed home. Mm. And this is based off of the data that we have going back all these years, survey data, polling data, on people that we know are identified as Republicans that just didn't turn out. So that's kind of the one kind of key to our strategy. Now, one of the things that the Trump administration has impressed upon the Republican parties all across this country is that we need to do an all of the above approach. And so on the 20th of April, of September, early voting started here in Minnesota for the general election. So we've been telling people, go out, do an early vote. If you want to vote in person at your election center, go and do that. If you have the opportunity to do an absentee ballot by mail, go and do that. If you absolutely refuse to do either of those things, then sure, show up on election day. But we're changing that strategy because we know that we have to hit these Republicans that stay home. So if every single Republican showed up and voted, we wouldn't actually have any Democrat leadership in this state with any power, but we don't. And so that's kind of the big key. The second key is that we are recruiting people to actually go out and door knock. Now, because Republicans tend to live in less populated areas, rural, outstate, even the suburbs, it takes more effort to hit the same volume of people than it does for Democrats. So Democrats obviously have a higher propensity of highly populated, dense areas where they can hit maybe a 2-3 blocks and they can hit 500 voters, whereas 2-3 blocks out in Grand Rapids, Minnesota is not going to net you very much. Or even if you go out to, you know, somewhere like Baudette or something like that, you're going to do one person every quarter mile or whatever it might be. And so that's the other part of the key to our success is we have to have people sign up and volunteer that will actually go out there and knock on doors to turn out these lower propensity Republicans.
This is such a fascinating conversation, AK, because I've always wondered, how do you teach people to go door to door? Like, what do you say? Because if you go to, let's say you go to Blaine, Minnesota, okay, you're going to likely have a pretty half and half mix of people. Some people will say, oh, thank goodness you're coming to talk Trump. Go get him. Yeah, you don't have to talk to me. Go next door. Then you're going to have half the people are going to say, oh, Trump is the Antichrist, so get out of my face. How do you coach people to go door to door and handle the people to just say, I'm not willing to have the conversation about Donald Trump? Where do you, how do you coach people to have conversations when maybe they're hard?
Yeah, so, you know, really comes down to good data. So when we ask people to go and knock on doors, we actually are targeting people that we have a bunch of data on that more than likely they lean towards us. So we're not really going to go and knock on low propensity Democrat voters. We actually would prefer, just from a political perspective, for them to stay home and not vote.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That is helpful to us. And so what you actually find is that when we're going after these low propensity Republicans, it's people that actually agree with us on everything. It's just they're not motivated because they think it's A, not worth their time, or B, that the system basically is not going to allow for Republicans to be able to win. And so just by going there, like one of the things that we do is that we encourage people to just stick to the issues. Ask people, what is it that, you know, what's your top issue right now that makes you upset or makes it difficult for you to be able to live the life that you want to live or difficult for your family? And you typically are going to get these same responses, right? It's going to be the economy. It's going to be inflation. And we say, let's stick to those issues. And then the most important part about our door knocking effort is ask them, are you registered to vote? Which Minnesota has automatic voter registration, so a lot of people are. But if they're not, say, well, will you consider, you know, basically getting registered to vote? And then the second question is, what's your plan for voting? And if they say, oh, I'm not sure, say, hey, we have early absentee ballots. We can have a ballot mailed out to you. And then in our system, we're going to try and follow up with that person to find out, did they actually turn in their ballot? Now, we can't control whether or not they're going to vote for Donald Trump or for other Republicans down the ticket. But again, based off of this data, if we can encourage them to get registered to vote and then encourage them to actually vote by mail or vote early, we know that we will more than likely get more Republicans to vote than we have in previous years. And this has been a huge paradigm shift because Republicans in general believe that election day is one day. You show up, you vote in person. But that's not what the strategy is, because that is not what the Democrats are doing. So if we want to be competitive, we have to do what they do. And then once we win, believe you me, look to the states like Florida, that after they're able to win, they actually go back and they make our election laws the way that they should be to reduce the improprieties that can happen. I don't even argue with people about whether or not it's happening or not happening. My thing is, let's do everything in our power to win. And then once we win, let's make our elections more secure by doing things like having to show a photo ID, doing things like, yeah, you know what, if you want to open up a voting window, maybe let's not have it be open for 45 days. Maybe we'll only let it be open for 2 weeks.
Yeah. So things like that. Makes sense. Yep. Is the Trump campaign active in Minnesota right now? I hear it being discussed both ways.
Yeah. So kind of look at it this way. What the Democrats will say and the media talking heads that support the Democrat and their policies will say, hey, look, we went around and we've seen that Trump isn't doing any big media buys. So that means that he's not focusing on Minnesota. And what they don't realize is that we have 13 campaign offices in Minnesota. We have 14 full-time staff, and we're not trying to, you know, be the flashiest campaign. It is truly to us about getting people out and knocking doors. And that's where the money is being spent. And so we do trainings every week. Just this last Tuesday, or I should say just yesterday, we had tonight at 7 o'clock, Kellyanne Conway is going to be on a training call with our Trump Force 47 folks. And so, you know, these are things that we're doing. Last week, Roseanne Barr was on. And so that's where we're spending our money, really. So it's not necessarily about getting the big flashy ads on TV, because we just think that those don't actually drive propensity. We actually need to have physical people knocking on doors. And so that's really what we're doing. So, yeah, this is why the media kind of spins and they say, see, Trump is not focusing on Minnesota. But again, if you look at this data, Trump 100% is in play in Minnesota. And the only way that we can make sure to bring it home is we have to get people out there knocking on doors. If we do that, I think we will win.
And how different is that than 2020?
I mean, it's night and day. 2020 was all about doing the big media campaign buys, having huge rallies, and getting signs everywhere. And the idea was that you could create kind of a cultural force that will encourage people to go and vote. But what we realized is that that didn't happen at all. Instead, a lot of people thought that we had it in the bag, because everywhere they drove around, they saw a Trump sign. And so that's even another part of the strategy. In order to get a Trump campaign sign, you actually have to download the Trump Force 47 app and at least do 10 contacts in order to earn 10 yard signs. So there are a bunch of people that have complained to me, and I get it, because it's a complete difference of saying, hey, I just want to grab a couple of signs. What do I got to do? It's like, well, you can always go purchase them on the market, or download this app and let's do 10 voter contacts and you can earn yourself 10 Trump signs. So
love it. The Trump Force 47. I love that. Hey, before I let you go, AK, I got to ask you this. I hope that someday in my lifetime, we don't have to talk about the black vote and the white vote, and we can just say we're all Americans, because when we get to heaven, nobody's going to care. We're all going to be there. But it seems to be an issue, and people talk about how people of color are voting and things like that. As a person of color yourself, what are you seeing among people that you bump into, social circles, your neighborhoods, and wherever you go, the places that you frequent? Is the attitude about Trump starting to shift? Are people able to kind of put aside the fallacy of all this racism stuff you hear? Or what do you think is the black community in the Twin Cities, maybe area especially? Is that changing at all?
Yeah, this is actually one of the most fascinating things to understand. So first and foremost, because I grew up in Devil's Lake, I sound like I grew up in Devil's Lake, but I, in fact, am black. My father is actually from West Africa, Sierra Leone, and my mother, she grew up in the Candu area, North Dakota. And so, yeah, I grew up as a black kid. My name, I go by AK Kamara, but my first name is actually Abdulrahman. So I have a very ethnic name, right? It's Arabic. And so growing up, you know, there's always this perception that Republicans are racist. And if you actually want to do anything to help your community, you actually have to become a Democrat. And that completely changed when I became an adult and I started to do some digging and asking questions about values and morals, and, you know, even applying the principles that Martin Luther King Jr. put out there about not being judged by the color of our skin, but the content of our character. And so one of the things that's most fascinating is that Trump has this ability to break through these narratives and barriers. And in fact, if you look at different publications such as The Root, also there's a huge survey kind of like political action that goes out that the NAACP puts out there. And what they found is that black men under 50, at least one in four were 100% all in on Trump. And then when you include people that had a lean to, that number was almost 40%. So 40% of black males under the age of 40, according to the NAACP, are open to voting for Trump. And this has caused a lot of consternation within the Democrat Party. And that's why there has been this huge focus on race from Kamala Harris and everything like that. And so you're finding this day-to-day interactions. My brother-in-law, he's black. He's originally from Chicago. And me and him talk. And he's a guy that actually kind of grew up in the streets. And so, like, he's not a guy that's, like, you know, really politically savvy. But he and I talk about Trump. And he's like, yeah, you know, I think Trump ain't a bad guy. And, you know, things were better, like, financially. And I think these are the things that are resonating with a lot of black Americans and Hispanics as well, Hispanic men and women. I was just looking through a Quinnipiac poll earlier today, and these polls show that nationally that Hispanics were actually breaking over 50% for Trump over Kamala Harris. So there is this entire shift that's happening, and I think it's amazing because I think President Trump is not just pulling in Republicans. Like, I'm very hardcore right-wing conservative, and I'm proud about that. but he is able to pull in these moderates, the RFK Jr. types, folks like that, that are just saying, I'm tired of this constant system that the Democrats are employing. Everyone's a victim. The government's going to solve all of your problems. That's not what we believe America stands for. And so
right.
Trump is the only alternative to what Kamala Harris has given you.
Yeah, absolutely. AK, I could talk to you all day. It's been a great conversation. I hope you'll come back and visit us again, because I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I know our listeners did too. And no DACR to no DACR, we can have this chat here today. So thanks very much for giving us a few minutes, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Scott, and I'll be back anytime you want.
Sounds good, AK. Thanks so much. Take care. 454, Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back on the program, we're going to tell you a little bit about some unemployment numbers rising across the country. But what about the underemployment numbers? All that and more coming up next. Here we go. Hour number two, Steve Hallstrom Show. Heading home with Hallstrom on this Tuesday afternoon. September 24th, 2024. Got one more week of September, then we're into October. And it starts really feeling like fall, so we'll take this as long as it lasts. Nice day today. A little breezy out there, but been a fair amount of sunshine. We will take it. Steve Hallstrom Studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to pccnd.com to learn more. Coming up in this hour, we're going to visit in just a few minutes with Cody Cashman, the GM of the Red River Valley Fair. And now that the new and expanded Big Iron is in the rearview mirror, how'd everything go now that the construction guys and gals have been involved? And then Blois Olson will be with us at 5:35. There's a fair amount of conversation that the Minnesota legislature could tip from Democrat to Republican this year. Can that really happen? We'll find out about that. But we begin the 5 o'clock hour with the 5 o'clock, the top 5 at 5. I almost said 5 o'clock wrap. That's what we do it for. The top 5 at 5 is brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to nancykellyrealty.com and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small town living is still a thing. Here is what I believe to be, or here are what I believe to be the 5 most consequential stories in the news cycle here today. Can't talk all of a sudden for some reason. All right, so let's talk some more, shall we? Morehead City Council members have approved a preliminary tax increase for 2025. They are increasing their expenditures by $3.1 million to a level of $24.2 million. That is a 12.8% increase. We've been riding Fargo pretty hard for trying to trot out an 11.2% increase. So how do you like 12.8 if you're in Morehead there? It's going to cost more to live in Morehead. Still opportunity for people to get in and weigh in on this deal, because they have until December to pass the final budget. So get involved and speak your mind. Story number two, local colleges are citing higher enrollment numbers going into the 2024 school year. We've reported bits and pieces of this here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, but we have a more comprehensive summary here for you today. Concordia College, 28% increase in the number of incoming students. NDSU, 5% increase in first-year student enrollments, 6% in new grad students, and 18% increase in new transfer students. MSU Morehead had a new student enrollment of 8 percentage points on an increase there. M-State says they don't have the final numbers yet, but they think it's going to be around 6. And North Dakota State College of Science says it is up 7.2% from last year. I want to thank the good folks at Inforum, and also Valley News Live for chipping in on those stories there. Story number three, this is one that I think says something. I know a lot of people will see, well, it's a story on economic numbers and data surveys, and their eyes will kind of glaze over. But listen to this number. Consumers' view on the economy, says CNBC, tumbled in September, falling by the largest level in more than 3 years. The Consumer Confidence Index of Americans was 105.6 in August, but it dropped down to 98.7 in September when they did this September reading. And that's the biggest one-month decline since August of 2021. Respondents say they are scared about their jobs, being able to keep a job and being able to get a new one if they lose their job, and business conditions across the country. Very interesting. The biggest worries are people aged 35 to 54 who are earning less than $50,000. That is the biggest group that's fearful, and it was the biggest drop in the survey that was shown this month. Very interesting. Story number four, the number of underemployed Americans is skyrocketing. Yes, we talk about the unemployment rate from time to time when people are out of work, they lose their job for whatever the reason. But how about those that are underemployed? So here's what we have. This coming from the Kobiesi letter, which is giving us data that comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But these guys are a great follow on Twitter if you like some of this economic stuff. People working part-time jobs while seeking a full-time gig jumped 14.4% in August to 4.8 million. I want to say that number again. These are people that are working part-time because they can't get a full-time job. The number of those people jumped by 14% from July to August. That is a massive move in 1 month. The number, 4.8 million, it's the highest level since May of 2021. And as we always say here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, if the number is bad, it's likely worse because every good number turns out to be bad after the revisions, and the bad numbers turn out to be total dumpster fires when the real data comes in. So this is probably worse than what they're telling you, and what they're telling you is no bueno. Since October of 2021, this number of people has soared 32%, 1.1 million people overall. So, look, we've had a steady kind of rise in this, but a monster jump from August to September. And I don't want to spook you or anything, but I am here to do a job, and I will do it to the best of my ability. Over the last 45 years, spikes like this have always coincided with a recession. And one more note on this story. This comes as full-time employment dropped by 1 million workers over the last year and has declined for seven consecutive months. Did you catch that? Full-time employment dropped by 1 million workers over the last year. There's 160 million in the workforce, they say. So we're not talking about nothing here. And you got a million people across this country right now who have lost full-time employment. And it's declined for seven consecutive months. Yes, friends, the job market is deteriorating rapidly. Do not be fooled by whatever numbers someone tries to tell you, or it's not that bad, or the economy is doing great, or look at all these jobs we're creating. They're all government jobs or part-time jobs. I say that often. And so I say it again to you, my friend, today. And one more here for you. Got to talk a little Bison football here. The updated NCAA stats are out for FCS football. NDSU is doing very well in offense. They are number eight in the country at scoring points, 39.2 points a game. But defensively, it's not quite as good of a story. NDSU is tied for 37th in the FCS at 23.6 points allowed per game. And listen to these numbers in rushing and passing. They are 58th in rushing defense and 59th in passing defense. These are yards allowed. And when it comes to tackles for lost yardage, so getting guys behind the line of scrimmage, listen to this. There are 123 FCS teams in the football championship subdivision. NDSU's 116th. This defense is a problem. And I don't know. The offense is good enough to make it to Frisco. I'm not so sure about the defense. And one more NDSU note here for you is about this whole conference speculation. So there is a lot of speculation among people that follow this stuff very carefully that NDSU may have an opportunity to move up to the football bowl subdivision. So going from 63 scholarships to 85 to one of the big boy conferences. The Mountain West Conference seems to be the place there might have something going on. The Pac-12 is down to like five or six schools right now. They're looking to bring some schools in. So they're going to the Mountain West trying to pluck some schools out of the Mountain West and move to their league. If that happens, NDSU could get an invitation to the Mountain West. Now, we don't know anything. There's been no reporting that suggests that NDSU's in conversations or there's been any invitations from the Mountain West. However, Dennis Dodd is a guy that is pretty much fairly knowledgeable within the national sports scene. He writes for CBS Sports. And last week, he gave his prediction on what a new Mountain West might look like in 2026, and it includes NDSU, as well as South Dakota State and Montana. So very interesting. Don't know if there's anything that's going to happen, but those schools would be in there with San Jose State, Hawaii, that'd be a fun road trip, Nevada, New Mexico, Wyoming, Texas, El Paso, and New Mexico State. Now, this is all guesswork. I get all of that. Mike McFeely in the forum had a pretty good summary of that, so I give credit to Mike for the summary of this here. I just think it's interesting. I still think the odds are maybe 20%, but crazier things have happened. If they need to get schools to fill up their conference, could it be NDSU? And would it be for all sports, just football? Nobody really knows. But there's a lot of conference realigning that's going on right now, and it is possible for NDSU to be included in the party. 516 here on the Steve Alstrom Show, and those friends are what I believe to be, maybe apart from the NDSU football talk. That's just kind of fun. But the other four, I would say definitely among the more consequential stories you'll find in the news cycle today. When we come back on the program, we're going to talk to Cody Cashman, GM of the Red River Valley Fair. The new and expanded Big Iron is in the books, the rearview mirror for the year. What's the verdict on year one with the construction people involved? We'll talk to Cody about it coming up next. Capstone Classical Academy invites you to an unforgettable evening at the Capstone Colloquium. It's Saturday, October 12th at the Delta Hotel by Marriott in Fargo. Join them for an inspiring message from author N.D. Wilson, who will speak about helping our children become dangerous to the darkness. I love that saying, by the way. Dangerous to the darkness. The evening will also feature Shane Heilman of the Psalms Project, a group that is setting all 150 Psalms to music. Your participation will help fund scholarships, make a classical Christian education accessible to all families, regardless of income. Be part of the celebration of thought and giving. You can reserve your seat today at capstoneclassical.com. That's capstoneclassical.com. 521, Steve Alstrom Show, pleased to have on the program Cody Cashman. He is the boss man at the Red River Valley Fair Association, and we're looking back on Big Iron 2024. There was a new twist this year. It was the Big Iron Farm and Construction Show. And so we're pleased to have Cody on the line with us today to give us a little look back on how it all went. Hey, Cody, how are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Thanks. Well, I guess I'll just throw it out the big question to you there. How did everything go this year with the change and the tweaks that you made from last year to this year?
It was completely spectacular. We had a great year. Just couldn't believe the weather we inherited. It was wonderful. Everything went perfect. It was great, great weather, great crowds, great companies. I mean, it was just perfect. We couldn't have asked for a better year. Tons of people.
Yeah. How much work was it for you guys to be able to pull this off, to kind of add another sector to this program? It's always been obviously the ag equipment and implements and all of that. And this year bringing the construction element in there, how much of that was a lift for your team?
You know, honestly, Big Iron is probably the easiest thing we do. I shouldn't say that, but it really is when it comes down to it, because the people we deal with are so spectacular. When it comes to the equipment companies we deal with, whether it's Butler, Titan, Acme, you name it, right? Bobcat, all those folks are so quick to say yes when it comes to, hey, we want to try something new or we want to do something, will you help us? And the quick and easy answer is always yes. And so we were really fortunate to have those companies say, absolutely, we're going to do this. And it went off really, really well. I mean, Titan did phenomenal. They already asked us to grow the space for next year. So we're expecting the construction side to actually really take off. Luckily, the fairgrounds is 400 acres, so yeah, we'll find places for them to grow to.
Yeah, no kidding. You've got the right spot, no question about that. What kind of feedback did you hear from people that attended over the couple, 3 days that you were out there, and you know, what they liked about it and why people keep coming back? What kind of feedback did you get from the attendees?
You know, the feedback is always something we look forward to, because, you know, you never know. You always get somebody that maybe wants to complain about, oh, I had to walk too far or something like that, which Big Iron is huge. I don't think people realize how big Big Iron actually is, and we made it even bigger this year. So feedback was great as far as foot traffic goes. We were really happy to have as many people as we did, and we had the most vendors we've ever had. In fact, the compliments we got was Big Iron is essentially back and bigger than ever. And so I love hearing that, because, you know, I inherited Big Iron in 2020 during COVID, and we had the event, but we were probably 30 to 40% down.
Yeah.
And to see us rebounding like we have over the years, because a lot of folks are saying, well, you know, farm shows and trade shows are kind of going away. Big Iron is the biggest it's ever been. And so we're really fortunate to have the community we have. Obviously, the farming is a huge component. And I'll be honest, I was a little nervous this year because, you know, with commodity prices where they're at, and I wasn't sure what to expect. But most vendors we've ever had, I think we had 46 new vendors. We actually ended up having to take down horse stalls this year and add another building. It was really, really, really good problem. And so we're even thinking we have some pretty big announcements for next year, but I won't share those yet until they're confirmed. But we're really fortunate to have what we have. We're able to have a perfect concert night as well with Home Free and Lee Greenwood, and then we had a spectacular fireworks show. I don't know if you got the chance to see it or not, but everybody around the county should have been able to see them. They were huge.
Well, I know there were a lot of people going to Lee Greenwood because they were streaming like crazy through the grounds as I was finishing up my show that afternoon around 6 or so. A lot of people were just getting there, some people that hadn't been there at all. So that's great. You said 46 new vendors. That's great. Were they all construction vendors, or did you have some new ag vendors coming in as well?
Actually, all of those were ag vendors. I don't think we had – well, it's not true. I think we maybe had two or three new considered companies for construction. The nice thing about construction is all the construction companies we had for the most part also were ag vendors. So we didn't really count them towards new vendors. We're talking new innovative vendors, essentially folks that maybe are doing 3D printing with parts now. That's something that's kind of new and interesting. We had Grand Farm this year show up in a pretty big way. They did their live Autonomous Nation event on Thursday of Big Iron. And it was really, really interesting. And I think they had 400 people here. And it was all tech companies, all startup companies or companies that already exist. And I do think it's the future of Big Iron is these tech companies are going to be the next company that shows up and actually exhibits at Big Iron or does demonstrations at Big Iron. So we're really looking forward to those companies getting off the ground. I mean, there was a company I met from Boston that came to Big Iron to check out Autonomous Nation and Big Iron. And it was really neat. What they do is they're essentially autonomous helicopters, spray copters. So essentially they can have, they could spray the fields, you know, crop dust the fields essentially with helicopters without somebody actually in the helicopter. So, I mean, this is going to be something that is going to be really interesting in the next 5 to 10 years to see where the autonomous nation kind of goes and where it takes agriculture, because I think it's going to be really, really important. We had more demonstrations this year than ever. We had the weed bot come out, which essentially can see weeds, recognize weeds, and then spray it. We had tons of demos where we had, of course, you know, your drone flying. It seems like now it's just natural to see drones flying around Big Iron now. And we had the autonomous grain, Raven brought their autonomous driving tractor that essentially can drive without anybody in it. So a farmer can be in the combine and the grain cart can fall right along next to it.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, super efficient for the producers. That's the way to do it. You had mentioned, Cody, 46 new exhibitors or vendors. What did you track as far as attendees and people that came? What were your attendance numbers like?
So we're about 70 to 75,000 is our number. I mean, again, we don't really track attendance the way we do at the fair. I mean, it's a lot easier with the fair because you actually have to have a ticket and scan you in. So Big Iron, we use a company called Placer AI. It's a cell phone data, grabs how many cell phones were on the ground. So we were about 70 to 75,000. It felt like more than that, I'm not going to lie, but in 3 days, 75,000 people is a big farm show.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah, we're really, really happy with the numbers. And Wednesday was unbelievable. We almost ran out of parking.
Yeah,
we were in a really good position.
I can speak from firsthand experience on that. I had to drive around both days that I was out there. It was a trick to find a spot. We were able to do it. So if you're 70, 75,000, how's that compared to years past? Is it about the same or a little more, a little less?
No, we're way up. Last year was about 55, 60, I think. I'll have to look back, but we were definitely up. Our food was up, our beer, everything was way up. That's also how we tell. Trash was up. You know, when trash is up, you know you're doing well. Nothing's better than running out of trash cans or having to have the city come out and get the dumpsters early. And or my favorite complaint is there's no parking left. That means we're full, which is a great feeling.
Yeah, for sure. Good stuff. Well, it sounds like it all went really well. There has been it's not been easy to get people to events. You guys know that from the fair this year. And Moondance had to cancel a bunch of their shows. And it's not always easy to get people out there. To what do you attribute the success of Big Iron that you're able to continue growing crowds and vendors the way you are?
You know, as far as I think, honestly, most of it stems from being free. You know, we don't charge anybody anything to come to Big Iron. The vendors, I think, are competing for the same dollars, and I think it's getting more competitive. So I think that they feel that they need to be involved at Big Iron, because I'll tell you, if you're not at Big Iron, people question whether or not they're in business, which is kind of funny. We have farmers walking around and go, "Where's this one at?" And we said, "Well, they're not here." And they go, "Oh, did they go out of business?"
Mm.
We don't know. So it's just kind of funny. I think that's part of it. I think since, you know, business was so good, you know, the last 5-6 years or so for farming, or I should say farming, that industry, I guess, I think now that they're getting a little more competitive because the dollars are going to be stretched a little farther with the commodity prices where they're at, is my guess. I don't really have a great answer for that, for big iron, but I will tell you, I think events that are affordable, people are coming to. And so I'm looking forward to next year's fair because we're going to make sure it's affordable. And we're going to make sure the place is packed. We want people to have a good time. Our goals this year for the fair and just going forward is hospitality, affordability, and hospitality. We want people to have a great time. We want them to have memories. We want to educate them on agriculture. And so we're pretty fortunate to live in the area we do. Everybody supports the fair. We've had more calls ever since our fair than ever to come and step up as a sponsor. So we're looking for more sponsors to help offset costs so we can make it more affordable. So it's kind of a very cyclical thing when you think about it. It makes sense that the bigger companies in around town are going to be, I think, help footing those bills for the people so they can come and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, love it. Well, Cody, congrats on a great show. We enjoyed being out there. It's always a ton of fun. I just love being out with people that, you know, around here we talk about the Faith Family Freedom Crowd, and it certainly was that. So we had a great time being there, and kudos to you and your team for putting together a great event. So congrats on everything, and thanks for sharing the story.
Yeah, there's nothing greater than Lee Greenwood and fireworks.
Yeah.
I saw everybody at a farm show, right? So very patriotic year.
Yeah, you got that right.
Have it. Thanks for all your support.
Of course. Yeah, we appreciate you. Thanks, Cody.
Thanks.
Take care. Cody Cashman, GM of the Red River Valley Fair Association. Well, that's good news. 46 more vendors and like maybe 20,000 more people. That sounds like success to me. All right, when we come back on the program, the Minnesota legislative race is promising to be an interesting one, and there's some thought out there. The Republicans have a chance. Right now, Democrats have everything, the governorship, the House, and the Senate, but that might be changing. We're going to get some discussion on that with Blois Olson, founder of Fluence Media, when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. First, though, a check of news and weather. Get the quality, reliable help you need today at Labor Masters. They are Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo's number one choice for daily and temp labor. No job is too big. No project is too small. The team at Labor Masters, they work with more than 200 businesses, and they've been doing it for decades all around the Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo area to provide a wide range of daily and temporary employment positions. We've used Nancy's team many times, and they always show up early with a smile on their face. Go right to work. We love having them around. You will too. Find out more at labormasters.net, labormasters.net. Get the quality, reliable help that you need today. Pleased to be joined right now by Blois Olson. He is the founder of Fluence Media and a great political observer on what's happening around the great state of Minnesota. Blois, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Steve. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. So interesting times, right? There's a heck of a lot going on. One of the things I appreciate about the morning update that you send out by email in the email blast is you cover so many different things. You've had some notes along the way about the Minnesota legislature and the kind of the makeup of it right now. We know there's very thin margins in the House and the Senate, and obviously Democrats control the governor's office as well. What do you think that looks like in this upcoming election? And is there enough tea leaf out there to read so that one can make some predictions about what the legislature looks like after November 5th?
You know, look, I think that the tea leaves are starting to show. I mean, there's certain things we can see, but we're 6 weeks out and there's a lot of volatility still in this race. Obviously, the mood of Minnesota, the mood of the country is a little on edge. And finding undecided voters and figuring out what they're going to do is more and more challenging all the time. But look, I think that Republicans, the math is that Republicans need to win 4 seats net to take control of the Minnesota House. Republicans will tell you that they have seats that Trump won that Democrats now hold. And Democrats will tell you that they have seats that Republicans are targeting, but that Biden won. And we've had redistricting. So we've only had one election since redistricting. But there's about 12 to 15 races that will decide the Minnesota House. And reminder, Democrats need, or, you know, Republicans need net 4 to hold 3 to tie. There's one race up on the Minnesota's Iron Range that both sides concede is a flip from D to R. That's the Dave Lissegaard seat up in the Virginia area. Then you look at the other math. Democrats are playing defense in five seats, and Republicans are playing defense in two seats. So that's how close it is. So in those seats, depending on where they are, depending on what the presidential turnout is, not to mention the last mood, Walz, you know, impact on the race, you essentially have seven races that Democrats have more money. They're better organized. We've talked, you and I, before about kind of the challenges for the Republican Party in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But there's a path for Republicans to get there just with 6 weeks out. These are races that are decided by, you know, generally less than 200 votes. So that's how close and it's going to be. And we'll probably have a recount or two in there, too. So we could be waiting for a recount. And then the craziest scenario is we could actually have a tie, which means that Democrats and Republicans in 2025 would have to co-govern the Minnesota House, which in these polarized times, I'm actually hoping for, because it would just give me content
yeah, it would.
For the rest of the year.
Yes, no doubt. That would be get some popcorn and sit back for that. Completely get you. Remind me again, I know the margins have been very thin in both chambers, House and Senate. Is a couple of vote or a couple of seats either way, right?
Yeah, in the Senate, Democrats have had a one-seat majority. We do have a special Senate election this year. Kelly Morrison, a state senator, resigned from the Senate, and she's running for Congress in the Dean Phillips seat. So there is a special Senate election that both sides are putting a lot of resources in, but I put that as lean DFL. It's a suburban seat. It's one of these classic longtime Republican seats in the suburbs, but it's a moderate suburb where Trump just doesn't play well. And so we'll see how that goes. But, if I had to guess right now, I'd say Democrats hold the Minnesota Senate by one seat. And there's some other variables in the control of the Senate. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure book in the Minnesota Senate. But in the Minnesota House, Democrats have a three-seat majority. So, you know, that's why six-seat majority. They have a six-seat majority, meaning Republicans have to win four seats to take the majority.
Yeah, so a little harder of a lift on that side there as well. So depending on how people turn out, how motivated they are to turn out for either Harris or Trump will probably play a large part in that. What does your gut tell you about how motivated both Team Blue and Team Red are going to be to get out for their people this time around?
You know, I think in Minnesota, I think there's always high turnout, right? We're a high turnout state. But I think that is the macro factor of Harris replacing Biden on the ticket. Democrats had no energy. Their energy was really low. And Harris gave them energy. Then by selecting Walz, she added some energy to Minnesota, right? Like everybody, you know, you may not love him, but you'd rather, you know him. Wouldn't it be cool to have somebody from Minnesota be vice president? The Star Tribune has a poll out this week that shows that, you know, his favorability is about 53% in the state. But when you take key issues like COVID, like the riots, people don't have a favorable view of what he's done. And so Steve, I just said this to another reporter analyst a little bit ago. I said, it's Minnesota. Remember, like, oh, I don't really like how you did that, but come on over for a beer anyways.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. And we don't hold grudges in Minnesota, or at least independent voters haven't. And so that's where I think Democrats have energy. Don't forget, Amy Klobuchar is also at the top of the ticket against Royce White. She's going to have plenty of resources. She's heavily favored. And Republicans have never won the Minnesota House when Amy Klobuchar is on the ballot. So I think that's how people feel about it. But so even if Harris is favored to win the state, Klobuchar is going to win, you get down to those legislative districts that are decided by a couple hundred votes. And Trump turns out about 250,000 more voters in rural Minnesota than any other Republican. The real question is, does the energy of Harris hold the way it did for Biden in 2020? Do the suburbs start to vote on economics rather than social issues? Those are the factors we're watching.
Yeah. One of our earlier guests on the program today, we were talking about the Minnesota Star Tribune poll that shows a 5% advantage for Harris. But in the poll, in the sampling, there was an oversampling of Democrats and an undersampling of Republicans and independents. And the conversation we had was, okay, if Minnesota is at 5% and the KST poll showed 5 and Star Tribune poll showed 5, so 5 seems to be a pretty operative number here for us to take a look at. If it's 5 in Minnesota, but there's some sampling, just the numbers, they call who they get. The number might actually be closer. What does your gut tell you about what ends up happening in that race with Harris and Trump in Minnesota? Does she hang on by a little bit? Is it more of a margin than anybody is thinking? Does Trump have a shot? What do you think?
Look, I think that Trump had a shot while Biden was on the ticket, but I think Trump's a long shot. The campaign is disinvested here. And Steve, I have heard this narrative about samples in the Minnesota poll for 30 years, okay? It is right more than it's wrong. KSTP has 5 points. The Star Tribune has 5 points. And MinnPost has 5 points, okay? That, to me, says it's there. Do I think it could tighten? Yes. But that's when you start to look at the other factors, and there's never just one factor in these things. Democrats have a much better ground game in Minnesota. It's much more organized. They're going to have more resources. Klobuchar is going to have any resources that she wants from Senator Schumer, because this is thought to be a relatively safe seat. Royce White hasn't been able to raise the money to make this competitive. He's made a lot of noise, but he's not going to have money for TV ads. So the other things that Trump would need in Minnesota just are not there from an infrastructure and a finance standpoint to, I think, get him over the edge. And this is what I've said for the year that people have asked me this question about, can Trump win Minnesota? If Donald Trump wins Minnesota, the rest of the country doesn't matter, because it will be a landslide and he will be the next president. Minnesota is still not a top-tier state. We know that there's Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and now Georgia and North Carolina, maybe Arizona and Nevada. Minnesota is, maybe in the next phase for getting the resources and the attention that it would want. And again, if Minnesota flips, then, Michigan flips, Pennsylvania flips.
So red wave. Yeah. You had a really good write-up today on the Walz-Vance debate a week from tonight. And I thought it was well done, because you covered like 100 bases. I didn't even think there was that much to talk about with it, but there was all kinds of stuff there. What's your biggest thing that you are going to be watching for when Vance and Walz take the stage? What's going to be capturing your interest next Tuesday?
Just as an observer of Tim Walz for, many years, 18 years, and somebody who's moderated 3 debates with him in it, I'm looking for the Minnesota angle. How is he going to perform? What is J.D. Vance's style? I watched a couple of J.D. Vance debates over the weekend, too. Yes, I need a hobby. but in general, I'm looking to see how Walz responds. Because I think, as we think about scenarios here, Trump and Vance win, Walz returns as governor after this, amazing run. He's then in national conversations. How does he behave as governor? Or he wins and then, right, he's going, he wins and then Minnesota's got this other angle and now we're going to watch him on the national stage.
Yeah.
So I'm primarily focused on that. But, watching J.D. Vance debate, I don't think Tim Walz has ever quite debated somebody like J.D. Vance. He's very measured. He's very calm. And if he stays on the issues that are not whack job outlier issues like childless cat women and pets in Springfield, Ohio, I think he'll do fine. But those are issues that Americans and Minnesotans aren't talking about. Meanwhile, Tim Walz has a rural story, and he's going to tell it. And he's going to talk about growing up in rural Nebraska And there's a lot of things that people don't like about Tim Walz's personality, but Tim Walz is going to, you know, talk about the Minnesota story. And so I view it as like two puzzle pieces that aren't naturally going to fit together. Therefore, there's going to be some friction. I just don't know what the friction points are.
Yeah, well, neither one has backed off from having some very pointed comments about the other. And neither one seems scared to go toe-to-toe and slug it out and exchange blows in the middle of the ring. So it should make for good TV. I don't know if it's going to matter, if it's going to change any votes, but it's if somebody, you know, wipes the floor with the other, it could create a little bit of margin. And it looks like this is going to be a very, very close race throughout. So nobody's going to throw away a win no matter how they get it, right?
No, not at all. And like, is it going to matter? Is it not going to matter? If there's not another presidential debate, right, then it may be the last impression for many of Americans commonly viewing something, right? Like, who commonly see part of this race. And so that's one piece. And the other piece is, you know, I said on my Sunday show this past week, like, we didn't know we'd be talking about the things we're talking about in 2024, like 97 times. So we have no idea what we're going to be talking about after that VP debate. Because it's been, you know, this election is 0 days since something historical or unprecedented has happened. And I say that mostly jokingly, but you think about Biden dropping out, the Trump assassination attempts, Harris becoming the unified nominee, all of these things we would have never predicted. So I hate to predict what's going to happen after that debate next
Yeah,
week.
For sure. All right, speaking of predictions, I got to get a Twins call from you here before we finish it out. Twins are a game back in the wild card race going into the final week. Can they get it done?
I think it's an uphill climb, and they need some help. I think they need some help from other teams, and so when you do that, you know, it's tough to have confidence in this current pitching staff, especially the relievers.
Yeah.
And they have to have the bats get going. So they're back at it tonight. I think if they string together some confidence going into the series with Baltimore, then it's better. But if they are not confident going into that series against Baltimore, then I think it's over.
Yeah. Well, they've got Florida or Miami, whatever they're called these days, who is terrible.
Miami.
Yeah. So Miami you could get hot and win three in a row, and all of a sudden things turn, and you take on a Baltimore team that may not have a lot to play for, and who knows what might happen. It's they got us through to Viking season.
They don't have any confidence.
Yeah, that's right. It feels like dead men walking, unfortunately, right now. Boys, appreciate it as always. Thanks a lot for the time.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right, take care, Blois Olson from Fluence Media. And the Morning Take is his newsletter. And if you are interested in following just what's going on in Minnesota, I think he lays it out pretty well each day in that. So we've had him on a few times. Always enjoy the visits with him. All right, 5:52 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, when we come back, I've got a question that's come in on the property tax vote. So we'll do that when we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, good stuff there from Blois Olson. I'll mention one thing quick about he didn't say that there wasn't anything to talk about the oversampling of Democrats versus Republicans and independents. He just said that he's seen this movie before, and it still plays out the same way. That's kind of how I feel, too. Somehow, some way, the Democrat always wins by 4 to 5 points. And right now, the polls say 5. If there's an oversampling, I don't know, but maybe the Democrats are better. His assessment is that the Democrat game is better on the ground than the Republican game. So I don't know. I think it's a long shot. But look, if Trump can stay within 2 or 3, that means the swing states should rally pretty good for him, and Minnesota will be irrelevant in the end. All right. Reese emails says, Steve, with the property tax vote that's going to happen, what are your thoughts about the following? Some cities and localities have spent a lot of money on schools, roads, etc. Their property taxes have gone up a lot. Some areas have not moved up much because the city's been more fiscally responsible. They haven't been spending crazy amounts on exorbitant schools and so forth. So what about that? Okay, so like a lot of arguments I hear on Measure 4, it's a fair point to make. My question is, how much of a motivator will that really be for someone to make a vote? You can have cerebral arguments all the time, but this issue is full of a lot of people that are going to say one thing in public, and in private they're going to say, yeah, I want to save the money. I just don't know how many of those places there are where the city hasn't spent any money and taxes haven't gone up. But even if you've had some places like that, those communities are still full of people who are looking to save a buck any way they can. It's a little like the out-of-state landowner argument. It's still going to come down to everyday people like you and me who have seen our taxes go up and up and not by small amounts. And we don't care whose fault it is. We just see an opportunity to eliminate a check. So I've heard a lot of arguments for this, and I think they all have some merit. I just don't think in the end they're going to outrank somebody saying, gosh, I can save a lot of money if this thing goes through. We'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. Have a great night, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.